I'm Lisa DeLay, and you're listening to the Spark My Muse podcast. So today on the show, we welcome Elise Chaffins, and she has written a book recently called Embracing Grief. And one of the reasons I wanted to have her on the show, and it means so much to me that she's here, is because grief is such a universal human experience. And her book is very powerful, and she's gone through a lot in the last few years. And I encourage you to get her book. My website, sparkmymuse.com, will have show notes and photos and things like that to fill you in a little bit on some of the details. But I thought that she would be the perfect person to walk us through some of her experiences, and especially some of the ways that we can kind of process through some of our own grief, but even more so to help other people as they walk through their grief, because sometimes we do this so poorly. So welcome to the show, Elise.
Thanks so much for having me, Lisa. I appreciate it.
So as we delve into this a little bit, I know that I had a little bit of trepidation because I know that in your book, and also I've gone through my own grief, and we all process it so differently. And I know you mentioned in the book how people have done it unwell. People have encountered the grief that you've gone through and done it so poorly, and I didn't want to come at it wrong. You know, there's some trepidation. And
right.
I think that that's kind of a common fear that we run into, people who we know are suffering, and maybe it's a complicated situation, or maybe we're just unacquainted with something that they've gone through. And so we kind of hold back, and we're not sure how to take that first step. And I don't know. How do you think, this isn't even one of the questions I sent you, but how would you suggest, here I am freestyling already. what would you suggest to even like take a first step in sort of approaching someone who's suffering?
Yeah. I mean, I think the first thing to do is just to say, I'm sorry, because a lot of times I think we try to say a lot of things or be inspiring or try even just in that to fix the person, to make it better for them. And honestly, pretty much everything you can say that feels inspirational or helpful or whatever is almost certainly going to add to frustration. Not every time, but often. Mm-hmm. So I think if you encounter somebody and they're really in a, you know, difficult place with grief or sadness or anger, the best thing to say to them is just, I'm sorry you're going through this. Mm-hmm. And just stop. Yeah. Stop right there. Don't keep talking. They'll ask for more as they need it, but I think most of the time. But yeah, mostly just stop, say I'm sorry, and then be done.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny because when we say I'm sorry, I've actually heard people who are grieving say that they didn't want to hear that, because they're kind of like, why? I've heard people say, why are you saying I'm sorry? It's not your fault. And so
right.
I've heard people even push back on that too. And I understand, like, I'm sorry doesn't mean that you're saying it's your fault. That it's
right.
Sort of like saying it really stinks what happened to you, and it hurts me too, and
right.
I'm hurting along with you. And I think that that's kind of the sentiment.
Right. Or I'm sorry you're going through this or something like that. Mm. But I think when you're trying to talk to somebody about their grief, less is more in a general sense. And I think a lot of times it's important to listen to the language that the person is using and echo that back to them. Mm-hmm. That seems to be something we kind of, when we're approaching somebody who's grieving about something, we kind of want to use the language that's comfortable for us, but that might not be what's really helpful to the person. Mm. So I write about this a little bit in the book, but for me, my son was stillborn at 35 weeks. Mm. And as a person of faith, it would seem like that would be using faith as a way to comfort would be something that would be beneficial. But for me at that time, I was just really angry at mm-hmm. God. I did not feel like anything was fair. Mm-hmm. And so any mention of God from an outside source felt much more painful to me. Mm-hmm. It didn't offer comfort in any way. Mm-hmm. And if people kind of listened to what I was saying, they would see I was not using much "he's in a better place" or mm-hmm. "I can't wait to see him in heaven" mm-hmm. or any of that kind of language. Mm-hmm. And so saying that to me is probably, I'm probably not using that language on purpose. And if I'm not using that, maybe don't use that either.
Yeah, and just I think listening well.
It really is. I think that's a lot of it, is just to listen to what the person's telling you. Mm. And listen even past what the person's telling you, because a lot of times you're going to get the "I'm fine." But listen to the language that they're using. Yeah. You know, if I talk about my son, I'll always say he died. I'll almost never say we lost or he passed away. It'll almost always be like death kind of language. Mm. And so when I hear people say that back to me, "I'm sorry that your son died," that feels like you're understanding me, you're listening to me. And I think that can be beneficial.
That's a fantastic point. I think that there are going to be people who are in a grieving process and heaven is such a solace for them talking about that. And then there's going to be people who are so angry with God at that moment, and they're in a fight with God basically at the time, and that's just not going to help. And so that is so important to literally, that's what compassion is being with someone right there in exactly where they are at the time. And that's excellent for whether you're a pastor or a friend, to truly be with them, not drag that person out of wherever they are to where you want them to be or what is more comfortable for you.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. That's a very good point about just listen very, very carefully. And if you don't know, don't assume and don't drag them where you want them to be. That's excellent. And one of the things I had noticed as I was reading your book was you go through such a string of one loss after another, your mom, and there's a divorce, and there's some scandal, and there's just one thing after another that is so traumatizing that even reading it, I felt, and again, I'm like an asthmatic, so I like have a breath. I feel like my chest closing, you know, I'm like, because that's how I hold tension. And I was empathizing and just feeling your suffering along with you as I'm reading the words. And I was thinking, this is really traumatic. And you're talking about how you're essentially feeling post-traumatic, or even not post-traumatic, but just traumatic.
Traumatic
stress. And I think some people assume that that happens for, like, if you've seen war and death, but of course it doesn't. That's a sympathetic nervous system issue, that when your neurons are firing like crazy because of stress, that's a real issue that sometimes and I think maybe it's important to have medication to calm your nervous system down, but that you're going to feel physical symptoms because of stress, and that's not made up. That's what happens when your body's stressed out. And maybe you can take us through like what you're going through, not just circumstantially, but the emotions that the mental and the physical that went along with it, that comes along with grief. And, you know, what was some of that? And you might still be in the midst of that. And how did you first notice it? And how did you move through that?
Yeah, I mean, it was in the course of a year, it was a really ridiculous amount of things that happened. I apologize. I went through this time where for about the first 6 months, the first thing that happened was my mom was diagnosed with ALS. And then not terribly long after her diagnosis, I had an affair and left my husband, got remarried, got pregnant, and then we had a stillbirth, and my mom passed away in the midst of all that. And there were just a lot of things that happened. And after my son's death, I realized that I was just a complete mess after that. And in a way that I knew I was not going to get better. With everything that happened up to then, it's like each thing was bad. And I kind of gutted through. And then the next thing happened, and I gutted through that. And then the next thing happened. And it's like, as each thing happened, there was less gut there to go. And so, after my son's death, I was just kind of an absolute, I was just done. And so for me, I went and found a counselor that I could talk to. Because I was just at a place where I knew I couldn't get through any of it anymore. And for me, I tend to be a pretty ebullient personality and bubbly and talking to people and all of the things. And after his death, I just was completely shut down. And there was just so little of me that I could recognize. That I knew I had to do something. I knew that I was just, there was no way I could get better at that point, on my own. There was nothing I could do, to get through it. And so for me, finding a counselor was what really helped. And I was able to talk to her just about pretty much everything. And I think whenever you're looking for a counselor, if that's the route that you go, you know, I mean, it's just important to look for somebody to know kind of what you want out of a counselor. And I got really super lucky in that I found an amazing therapist right out of the gate on my first try. But I knew what I wanted. I knew that I wanted somebody who dealt specifically with women. I knew I wanted somebody who, for me, even though I was a person of faith, I did not want anybody who was a Christian counselor. That was something that I knew I wasn't going to be able to be as honest as I felt like I needed to be about some of the nasty feelings that I had. And so for me, those were all the kind of things that I wanted in a person. I think whoever it is, you need to know what you want when you go looking for that. And yeah, I mean, medications are absolutely good and helpful and can sometimes get you to the place where you're able to talk to somebody. And they're just, you know, to help clear your mind so you can even begin to think, or, and they can be helpful just in the long term. If there are things going on and you need help in the long term, that's take what you can get in as far as that goes. I think for everybody, that's kind of like the theme of my book, even though there's a specific chapter about grieving communally. I think that's really the whole purpose of the book, is that we really need to recognize that it's okay to grieve itself, and then that it's okay to, and beneficial to, invite people into that grief as well. Whoever that is, whoever is safe for that, do that.
Yeah, I think one of the things that that I think people might not understand, there's still a bit of a stigma, I think, with taking medications during the grieving process or during a time of trauma. And I think maybe what people sometimes don't realize, and maybe you could just speak to this briefly before we move on to the next part, but that if you are in a traumatic grieving experience, that you actually don't have the wherewithal to process grief sometimes because your brain is so overloaded that the medication allows you to not see. This was kind of my situation, because when I was grieving my father, when I would start speaking about it to process through it, I would sweat profusely and my heart would palpitate, and I would just have a really severe sympathetic nervous response. And so that would sort of shut it down at right there. And so I actually needed medication to calm that down, just so that I could sort of see clearly and then process through. And then I didn't need it anymore after that. You know, it was just, it was just to get through the other part because my brain was so overactive, you know, and so I think some people think, oh, well, that means that I need to be on it forever. And sometimes it does help because your brain is so active. But it's funny because there's a stigma, like if you're a diabetic and you need medication, mm-hmm. no one would think twice. But if your brain is overactive, it's like, oh, well, there's an issue there, you know?
Right.
And exactly. It's like, well, it's still your body, you know? I mean,
right.
It's yeah, interesting.
And an intense trauma mm-hmm. Of any kind, I mean, an intense is a very personal kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You know, the loss of a parent for one person might not be as traumatic as it is for another person. But, mm-hmm. you know, whatever trauma you experience, I mean, that can have lasting effects on your brain. So you might need it forever because it might just change the way your brain works.
Yeah.
And that's okay if that's the case. But yeah, just denying it outright is, you know, can definitely be detrimental to, you know, moving through the worst of the grief, I think. Mm-hmm. So if it's something you need, use medication, use therapy, mm-hmm. use other people. It's good.
Yeah. And I think the nice thing about your book, among other things, is that it's when you say embracing grief, it's kind of like taking the stigma out of some of the scary and just the negative side that we don't want to really talk about grief because it can feel so negative to go through it, and it can feel so negative to experience it, and you don't really want to talk about it, but if you're going through it, there's no way around it. You only go through it. And so, you know, you might as well, especially if you're in it, you might as well try to understand it for what it is.
Right.
And the thing I wanted to talk about a little bit too was you mentioned this isolation that you felt, and the isolation that people feel when they're in grief is so universal that it's a wonder that we feel it so intently, but we're all like, no one can help me. I'm so alone. Yet everybody has said that. But yet it seems so potent and powerfully true. Yet when you're talking to someone else who's grieving, they'll tell you the same thing that you might have just said to them. Right.
Right.
And yet, you know, when you're trying to reach out to someone, there's someone that I work with right now who's lost a spouse, and she has just told me the very same thing. And I said, I know what you mean. And she's thinking, no, you don't.
Right.
and that's okay. Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to say, yes, I do.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But at the same time, you know, it's really a conundrum. It's a real paradox that we feel intently alone. And, you know, what do you say to that situation?
There is a certain amount of alone that you're going to feel in grief because it's so personal. There are certain parts of it that mm-hmm. others can never understand, that they can never really get about your own grief because it is personal. The relationship that you had with this person, mm-hmm. the opportunity that maybe you don't have anymore, whatever it is that you're grieving mm-hmm. is going to be very personal to you, and that is going to make it a little bit isolating. Mm-hmm. I think the key is to remember that there, even though the circumstances are going to be unique, the overall process is still very universal. The way that everybody doesn't feel the same way that you felt about that person, but everybody has their own stories that do kind of connect back to that. So the stories that I might have about my mom passing away are not going to be the same ones that you have about your dad when he died. But some of the things are going to be similar. And I think, and it can be hard to recognize that in the middle when you're feeling just wretchedly bad. And in the first few days, it's probably not going to help that other people are feeling the same thing. But I think as time goes, it's good to go ahead and start to share some of those stories. Tell the stories about the person. A friend of mine on Facebook spent like one whole month and just told stories about her mom. And I loved that. I thought it was so cool. And yeah, like they don't really matter to me so much because I don't know her mom, mm-hmm. but they matter to me because they mattered to her. Mm-hmm. And it was a way for me to kind of get a better picture of her mom, mm-hmm. to get a better picture of really of her as well, and kind of better understand her grieving process. And so I thought that was just really cool that she opened up in that way and shared those stories. Mm. And not everybody's going to be the storyteller. Not everybody's going to have the same way that they're able to do that. Mm. So I think you have to make decisions about how you are. Mm-hmm. And so like for me, it might be writing a post on my blog and kind of letting it out for the public. You know, for you, it might be having a cup of coffee with a friend, but whatever it is, don't do it alone, I think is the main thing is find somebody. There's somebody who's safe. Mm. There's somebody who can talk to you, and find that person. And if you see somebody on the other side, who is being isolated, do something, you know, talk to them. I think that's part of it too.
Yeah, there are some groups. I know our church has something called Grief Share, which is, mm-hmm. I believe, a national or even international organization that right. they meet, I believe, twice a month. And it's specifically around the holidays when you really need to do new things around the holidays. If you've been with a loved one doing the same thing each holiday, then they're not there. The holidays and birthdays and those types of things can be extremely painful times when you've done, if it's been someone who's been in your life for a long time and then they're suddenly gone. Those can be much more debilitating times during times of, you know, where you grieve again, all over again sometimes.
Right, absolutely.
And so I think you're right about linking up with other people, whether it's other people in your family, other people who are bereaved. Mm-hmm. That's really is key. And finding those people and not just suffering alone and taking a brave step out. And even though that can be really painful and risky feeling, but
absolutely.
I think that there isn't a way out of it, because alone you really are, it's some extra suffering, I think.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So
yeah, definitely.
One of the beautiful, maybe my favorite phrase in the whole book is that you say that grief helps us find our humanity. And if you could unpack that or unravel that a little bit, or what you were getting at in a deeper way. I'd love that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we tend to think of grief as the dehumanizing part of whatever thing that goes on. But really, it's the traumatic event that happens that tends to be what kind of strips our humanity away, I think. When I went through, you know, any number of the things, the loss of my mom, the divorce, and the divorce was felt like one that was really took away a lot of my humanity, a lot of me. Mm. And when I just stayed in that place and just felt that and just kind of let all the grief and, or let all the guilt and shame kind of pile up on me, it actually stopped me from grieving what I'd done. And you know, just the loss of the marriage in the first place. And so those kind of things, when I chose to go ahead and say, yeah, what I need to do is grieve, that was what brought me back to myself. It was what allowed me to say this, you know, the way this happened was really awful. And it was what allowed me to ask for forgiveness from, you know, from different people. It was what allowed me to kind of begin the healing process from it by whenever I didn't want to grieve because I didn't feel like I was worthy to grieve or I didn't deserve to feel sad. Any of those kind of things, that was where I stayed in this non-me kind of place. It was when I went ahead and said, yeah, this was bad. Now I need to grieve it. That was where I found my humanity again. Mm. And I think that when we attach like morality to sadness or anger, to any emotion, any kind of emotion, then we do ourselves a disservice, because really what we feel is just what we feel. Our actions beyond that can be moral or immoral, but just feeling sad, feeling angry, feeling depressed, feeling anything, feeling happy, feeling, you know, joyful. These are not, you know, good or bad emotions. They're just our emotions. And so, yeah, when we recognize that, then I think we can allow ourselves to go ahead and grieve. That's what I think anyway. And I think grief is so universal and so human. Mm-hmm. It's something everybody does. To greater or lesser degrees, everybody grieves. And so it connects us to one another as well.
Yeah, grief is really just the proof that we've had a human experience and that we are attached and we can lose something. You know, I know that this was a while ago on my blog, and I was studying this kind of fascinating correlation that grief, when it's experienced, especially physically, looks exactly the same as separation anxiety. Mm-hmm. And when we're tying that to also feelings of, because any grief of some kind of loss too will always involve some kind of twinge of usually guilt and sometimes shame, depending on, for instance, if somebody, let's say, commits suicide, that you would know, and it might have nothing to do with you, but you could feel a twinge of guilt or shame or something that right. somehow it's tied to you, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to sort of grieve what could have been or what tie that might have to you, and you have to sort of move through grace and forgiveness of, well I don't know if I could have done something, or I don't know what could have been, and I have to forgive that person, I have to forgive myself, or you know, forgive in a sense of washing that whole situation with grace. And I know that that has a deep part of your story as well, and how you moved through, you know, kind of apprehending, and I'm sure this is going to be a lifelong process there's layers and layers, but when you're sort of apprehending your story and your situations and your losses, you're saying, okay, here's the truth of what happened, or here's the different situations and the different losses, and here's how grace moves in and through it. And that's part of all the part of the grieving process as well.
Absolutely.
And so what, after, you know, they say that the whole grieving process has all those stages, and you move through those stages in the book as well. And where do you think that the forgiveness of yourself in the situation and the grace part, does that happen at the end? Was it interspersed? Or is it still working its way out?
I try not to think of grief in terms of like ages, stages anymore, because well, there are like certain amounts of stages, I guess. I think I use this example in the book. I talk about it as kind of a water cycle almost. And so like in the beginning, it's just this big ocean of horribleness sometimes. Mm. And you just feel like you're drowning. And then there's just, you know, are giving into the warmth of other people, and there some of that goes away, and we're able to, you know, find ourselves on dry land again. And for me, yeah, I think the forgiveness and grace was kind of in that warming cycle. That was where I found that, was when I was able to recognize I need to get out of this. The worst part of it, I guess, it was then that I was able to look to other people. And honestly, I mean, there was a part of me that had to ask for forgiveness. There was a part of me that had to, you know, search for grace. And so there is some internal stuff that you have to do. It's not entirely external. And some of it is. Some of it's going to be, you know, people who will need to then offer the grace and forgiveness. But, you know, looking for that is something that we do. And so it took a little bit of time for me to get to that point, to be able to ask people, and different people were asked at different times. People really close to the situation probably got more preferential treatment than people who were pretty, who might have felt affected by certain things, mm-hmm. but weren't actually affected by it. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that can be hard to see, and to be able to sort out those sort of things. But yeah, I don't, it's hard for me to think in terms of stages anymore, because wow, like it, depending on the day, yeah. it can still be like right back at the beginning, back in yeah. the ocean. So.
Well, it's also too, it's really can be very hard when you're grieving and you've been really hurt. It's really complicated. It's not like there's a graph, you know? Mm-hmm. So something like a relationship that was destroyed, for instance,
right.
That is, there's hurt on both ends, you know,
absolutely.
You know, so it's really can be messy. So you might need to ask for forgiveness, but that person should ask for forgiveness too. Right. And so then it's like, there's loss and grief on both sides. There's hurt
right.
on both sides. And so I'm sure that it's like, well, I should ask for forgiveness, but so should they, you know? And so right. I'm sure that that's like, well, maybe should I take the first step? They should take the first step on this part. And I'm sure that that can get really, you know, it's like the risk of humbling yourself, you know, I mean, that's really that character of Christ that takes that first step, that spiritual maturity that really we are called to as people of faith, that in those instances where we feel, oh, I really don't want to take the first step, you know, and going, even when we are grieving and in some cases, and we feel like we've been more, you know, we've been hurt more than we've hurted or something like that
right,
too,
right.
to still say, to still make the first step, that can be so hard too.
Absolutely. Ugh. Absolutely. Yeah. And there have been, and I think we have to, at that point, also kind of recognize there are certain things that are not going to get better. There are certain relationships that haven't healed or have been, you know, really tenuously healed and are going to take a lot longer. And I think, yeah, that's definitely going to take time, and we just have to do our part sometimes. And sometimes, and then the letting go of that after we've done what we can do can be really hard. And, mm-hmm. and then there's almost like a separate grieving process for that. Mm-hmm. It's very layered. Mm-hmm. But I've found that there are a lot of people who are willing to go through it with you, mm-hmm. whatever your grief is, mm-hmm. there are going to be people who are willing to go through it with you.
Yeah. And I like to think that it just takes a teeny mustard seed of faith that the story isn't over yet.
Right.
Whatever that story is, whether it's a story of a relationship between two people in terms of peace, or in terms of, it doesn't mean total besties forever. It just can mean, reconciliation doesn't mean besties forever. It can just mean we agree to put our weapons down, you know?
Exactly.
And that can mean that's restoration too.
It is. Yeah. And it can be difficult when you want something more than that, when yeah. you want it to be the same yeah. and it's not going to be the same. But yeah, I mean, recognizing where progress is made, you know, that can be a big part of, you know, of coming through some of that. So,
and in terms of your own ability to see grief and have compassion for those grieving, I'm assuming that, or maybe you're still in the throes of it to sort of be, maybe you're still licking your own wounds, but has it given you a more of a well of compassion for other people in the process? And do you sense, like some people sense that their deepest suffering creates in a sense of vocation or a ministry that they wind up going into, almost like a calling? Do you sense that for yourself, or do you sense this is kind of a path that you're going on, and you sense other things down the road, because you've been a writer for quite a while.
Right. I mean, definitely it was something that I felt like I really needed to write about, and something that was important for me to tackle. There are still obviously a lot of things. I'm not a grief professional in any way. and I don't really know that I have aspirations toward that, but I hope that my own experience has made me more aware of recognizing grief in other people, so that when they might do something that's hurtful or do something that maybe feels like that's harder for me to understand why they behave in a certain way, that I might be able to see, you know, ways that they might be experiencing grief from something unrelated. I think there are a lot of things that happen to us through our lives that we never really properly grieve. And that has an impact on us as we grow, you know, and as we age and as we create new relationships, we bring some of that, everything we do, you know, we bring into our next relationship, into our next interaction with somebody, any of those kind of things. And so, yeah, I mean, there's always going to be a certain amount of past that's going to affect our future. And I hope that for me, my own experiences have made me more compassionate toward people and more willing to accept that there are things that have happened in their life that I don't understand, and that they're shaping their reactions to things as well. Which I'm by no means excellent at. But maybe after the fact, after I do my little yelly kind of thing, I maybe might understand that there are things going on outside of that. So, yeah.
So where can people find you if they want to read your blog and if they want to find your book?
Absolutely. My book is called Embracing Grief, and you can find it on Amazon and Kobo and Apple and Barnes & Noble. So it's available at all the places. And it's on sale right now for $1.99. And you can find my blog at knittingsoul.com, knitting like with needles, knittingsoul.com. And you can find me on Twitter and Facebook, both at /Elise Chaffins.
Okay, that's good. And and also I'll have show notes, so in case the spelling, if people are driving in their car and they can't scribble anything down, then at sparkmymuse.com there's always show notes, so that'll be there for a reference. But this has been really good. I'm glad that we can get some of the word out about grief and some of the tougher topics. So this isn't one of those episodes where people I will have to put somber music on.
Right, there you go.
For this one, it's not one of the happier episodes, but it's really necessary that we talk about some of the tougher things, because I think it's just part of the reality of the human experience. And if we're not going to be realistic about that, I think we'll gloss over some of the more important things that help us live well and help us love other people.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks again for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah. And thanks for writing an important book, and many blessings to you as you continue to heal and work in your relationships and continue the grieving process, which is part of just the process of being human.
Absolutely. Thanks.
Show notes for this episode can be found at sparkmymuse.com. There you'll find details for websites and people and books mentioned in this episode, and sometimes you'll find photos and videos too. Please stop by and check it out.